on Natural Resources. And I'd also like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5532 relating to the Oregon State Marine Board. Staff like to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I've provided you a handout that has a few brief charts as an overview for the department before they begin their presentation. The governor's recommended budget is $27.2 million total funds. That's primarily other funds and a smaller amount, $5 million of federal funds. The first pie chart, which is on the second page, gives you an idea of their mix of funds. You can see that 63% of their funding is other funds, and the checkered slice of pie is their new fees, a request for new fees. And the bar chart below also gives you that same view, only over time, shows you how their revenues have increased and then leveled out. And then the...
I like that checkerboard.
Yeah.
That's new.
Pretty snappy.
That's designed to keep you awake.
Yes, yes. After lunch, afternoon hearings. The on page three at the top is a bar chart showing how the revenues for the Marine Board have been pretty static and since 95-97, while their beginning balance has been shrinking, so they are beginning to eat into their beginning balance, which is one of the reasons that they have been looking at their looked at their fees in the interim and now are proposing a fee increase to keep their programs at the same level. To continue their programs.
Sure. Representative Morgan.
If we were to make the assumption that we would grant the fee increase, is there any way to predict what the ending balance is going to do?
Well, what we try to do with the agency is maintain an ending balance of about 3 months' operation. And so the agency would be looking to put any additional revenues into their law enforcement program or their facilities maintenance program, so they would increase the number of grants to locals for their docks.
And then capture 3 months' worth of operating revenue in their ending balance.
Correct.
Okay.
At least that's what they attempt to do, and, you know, sometimes a little more less, but that's the idea. And the pie chart at the bottom of the page just shows you that their program is primarily for facilities and law enforcement and a smaller amount for administration, and most of that is made up of their education program campaign. And their main issue in this budget is their revenue shortfall. The next handout is the analysis, which you received on Monday also, but it is there for your reference. I've also attached for your reference, and I'm not going to go into detail, but the additions and their proposed enhancements, as well as their 10% reduction list on the next page. And also for your information is...
I'm not sure which order I put this in. Budget notes next. We have interim reports and budget
notes. Okay. There are three interim reports, and each one of those related to each of the budget notes that you'll see underneath that. And what I did was I attached the recommendations pages of the report, except in the case of the fees, I attached the entire report for your information. And on the last budget note, or the budget note relating to the department's organization and reclassifications, I attached the agency's report and the analysis that went to the emergency board. And I'll let the agency explain the results of those three budget notes to you.
Any questions from committee?
Mr. Chair, only that any of the pie charts show sources of funds, but you don't break it down. Where's the gas tax? Is that part of the other funds?
That is part of it. That's if you look at the third page at the top, the yellow bar is the fuel taxes.
Yellow.
the yellow bar.
Okay,
top of that
I see
is
it.
Our fuel taxes. I might also point out to you, if you're considering fee increases, Paul's not going to be too happy about this, but if the Department of Transportation is successful in this legislative session in getting a fuel tax increase on vehicles, it will also increase fuel taxes for this agency. So you may want to look at balancing that if that comes to fruition.
Okay. Any more questions? Thank you, Susie. Let me just put on the record that I was notified that Senator Dukes got held up in Portland and is excused for today's meeting. Paul, would you like to
present? Hold up with his gun?
Well, I'm not sure. He didn't specify it.
They had a transportation, economic development type thing they were looking at up there.
I assume traffic or something.
Yeah.
But I don't
know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. And if I may, I'd like to use these charts here to give you a brief overview of the agency and our budget. And I'll try to run through this. This is our mission statement. We are dedicated to safety, education, and public access. A few fast facts on our agency. We're a little over 40 years old. We were created in 1959. Five-member board. We have 38 staff members, and there are no changes in the staffing level proposed as part of the budget. We are here, located in Salem. We have about 196,000 current customers that we serve with the program. And there's about another 500,000 non-power boats in the state. We're also beneficiaries of some of our access and enforcement efforts. Oregon ranks in the middle of the nation in terms of boat count, in terms of 26th in boats nationwide and 28th in population, so we fall right in the middle there. We've got about 60 registered boats for every 1,000 members of the public population.
Excuse me, Paul.
Well, I haven't had the benefit of hearing this report before, so forgive a couple of kind of naive questions. With 500,000 non-registered, non-motorized boats, I see at some docks quite a heavy use of kayaks and large boats, not just little rubber dinghies, but pretty good-sized water vessels that use the facilities, are unloading them from trailers, that make use of the amenities, but I presume because they're not registered, they're not paying any fees, or are they paying fees?
Chair Representative Johnson, no, they don't pay a fee.
We don't have to waste the committee's time, but I would like very much to chat with you about why it is that some of those non-motored vehicles that make use of the amenities don't participate financially. I'm sure there are very strong constituent groups that argue against tags or registration for those boats, but if they're using the facilities and we're kind of on a fee-for-service look at the world right now, given the budget crisis, that might be a revenue source.
I'd be happy to visit with you later about that, but you hit it right on the head. There have been attempts in the past to bring that segment of the user community into some form of a user fee or registration program, and they have very fiercely resisted that kind of effort, and so it's
How successful are you in getting all of your motorized customers to register and pay the fees?
We believe we have good compliance in terms of the people that are supposed to be paying the fee.
Okay, thanks.
Paul, if you have any information, if you've looked at this in the past, could you get that to our committee?
We'll do that. And Mr. Chairman, in fact, we did a report on that subject 2 years ago. I'd be happy to furnish copies to the committee on that subject.
Thank you.
I guess the key thing, and it's already been mentioned by your staff, is that we don't receive any general funds. We are funded entirely by user fees. This may be a little difficult to see, but it's in our budget as well, our organization chart. This was one of the budget notes that we were asked to look at and review. We made a couple of minor changes. We moved the information system specialist from our registration section into business services. But other than that, in looking at the makeup of the agency, we're fairly flatlined once you get below the office of the director. And we have a total of 6 management positions within the agency. 5 of them are running various sections of the agency. So water tariff registration, business services, we have an education section, law enforcement section, and a facility section. So there's a fairly short distance from the bottom to the top within our agency.
When you move from category, did you change the classification?
There were some changes that were made as a result of the review and the report that we made to the emergency board in October. The registration supervisor and the education supervisor were upgraded to PMBs. The facilities manager position was eliminated and changed to a supervisory facilities engineer. We use the savings from one position to help cover the cost of the others. This gives you a glimpse at our vessel registration over the last 12 to 14 years, going back to 1988. Through the 90s, we were growing at about 3% a year. We were picking up 3,000 to 5,000 new boats a year. And that peaked out in about 1998. And since then, we've been pretty well flat. Now, that's not to say that new boats aren't being registered in the state. In the last 3 years, we registered nearly 12,000 new vessels, brand new vessels. But by the same token, we were flat, so 12,000 vessels went away. They went behind the barn, or they went out of state, or they were scrapped, or whatever. We have not been able to pinpoint a reason for this flattening. You can attribute it to a number of things. Fishing opportunity, certainly in 2001, the drought was a factor affecting participation. So there are a number of things, but we've even surveyed people to find out why it's not continuing up. We really can't come up with a definitive answer. It's everything from not enough time to not enough money to I've gotten out of it, I'm getting too old, moved on to driving an RV or some other thing. So no real answer for you in terms of the why on that. Brief summary of our programs, 3 major areas, administration and education, and these follow our budget structure as well. Administration and education, where we do registration and titling. We do register outfitters and guides as a little sideline. We have ocean charter boats under our wing and our boating safety and education program, marine law enforcement, and then our public access and boating facilities program. I'll give you a little more on those here in the next couple of snapshots. Registration and titling, we are a central processing agency for this. We have 136 bonded agents. These are boat dealers, businesses like G.I. Joe's and others that act as agents for us. They're out in the community and that you can go in and get your transaction done there. We process centrally in Salem. 196,000 customers, as I said. We also title floating homes, primarily in the Portland area and on the Columbia River. About 1,000 outfitters and guides that are registered and 130 ocean charter boats. We do issue marine event permits for races and regattas and things like that.
Paul, are you going to, I'm interested in the outfitters and guides, are you going to go later on in your presentation as to what the numbers are doing there? Whether you're getting more outfitters and guides registered and...
Chairman, I didn't plan to go into that later, but that number has been fairly static over the last 10 years. Sometimes it goes up to 1,100, in that 1,100 to 1,000 range. People come, people go within that business. It's been pretty steady.
Is that an annual registration or biannual?
That's an annual registration. We have, this includes fishing guides, whitewater rafting outfitters, hunting guides, and people that do some miscellaneous things like llama pack trips. And
yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the floating homes and boathouses, do you merely register them, or does the Marine Board have anything to do with checking the adequacy of their sanitation when they're on the water?
Chairman, Representative Johnson, no, we merely issue a title and a plate for those so that they're identified, and it allows the owners to get a mortgage. That's the primary reason for that program. We don't get involved with local building codes or plumbing inspections or any of that. That's all a local government issue.
Paul, I just want to expand on that. Not all counties or local governments have DEQ. I mean, they operate it through the state DEQ, so I would think in some areas at least that would be a state issue as well, wouldn't it? But a different department.
That could be.
Coos County does not have their own DEQ or building codes, for that matter.
The siting of most floating homes is within established and existing mortgages. Of course, they're subject to state land leasing, Corps of Engineer permits for piling and gangways, and then local government regulation through building codes if they have that for things like sanitary sewer, electric, fire protection. Portland area, of course, we have whole communities that are floating. That's where most of these are located.
Mr. Chair,
just
back a minute to the outfitters and guides, specifically the fishing guides. I think conversation like you and I had earlier before we were here, quite an effort shift depending on what seasons are available and what streams are producing, whether the ocean's closed or not closed, and whether they can go offshore or if they have to stay in a river. So some of that increase that you see on certain coastal streams is a result of that type of activity, just effort shifts. Probably it's the same people taking advantage of what's ever available.
That is true.
All along those lines, Senator Krieger and I are having issues that are problems, I guess, you develop just because of that. And whether you discuss it today or not, I'd like you to be able to discuss tomorrow, maybe when we come back, if you or your board has given any thought to how to deal with this, and just prevent the over-utilization of some resources. And I'm not suggesting that we bounce headlong into it, but I do think it's something that we need to talk to the guides and factors and start thinking ahead a little bit, because it's becoming more and more of a problem all the time. Are you getting concerns voiced or complaints voiced at your level?
Chairman, no. We not in terms of resource allocation and pressure. The kinds of complaints that we would typically get would be between private non-commercial anglers and guides. We're trying to compete for the same space.
Sure.
And things like, you know, I got there first and no you didn't, and this is my water and no it's not, and those types of things, which there's no way to sort out.
We're hearing beyond that of trespassing on the private property just because of the numbers, partly of taking up the spaces of the parking lots or parking along public roads and blocking the roadways or making the roadways dangerous and those kind of things. It's something I think, again, not in a big rush to get anything established, but it's something we need to start talking about. Yeah, thank you.
Be happy to do that. A few other things that we do within administration. One of the more significant areas is waterway regulation and rulemaking, establishing local restrictions and speed restrictions, other types of rules and regulations to promote safety and to minimize user conflict. And then we also do user surveys to find out where people go, what they do, what's right, what they want more of or less of. And then we have our support services within administration as well. Boating safety education is one of our more significant program areas within the administration portion of the budget. Here we are involved with the implementation of mandatory boater education, which was enacted in 1999. We're working to train and coordinate the efforts of volunteer instructors. We put out publications. We have a website. We run public service ads, a whole host of things that we do here to promote boating safety, provide information and education to boaters to enhance their experience and promote boating safety. Then turning to the second major program area, Marine Law Enforcement and Safety Services, here we contract with 32 county sheriffs, Law and Water Patrol and Safety Services, as well as the Oregon State Police, which is a statewide contract that we have for the service. Under these contracts, we provide on-water patrols. We help to supply them with patrol boats and equipment. We train and certify marine law enforcement officers, coordinate the marking of waterways, and they carry out our enforcement. They're really the enforcement arm of the agency in terms of enforcing
Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a very impressive list of collaborative efforts with the state police and local government. What will the decrease in the number of OSP troopers, what effect will that have on your ability to implement boating safety services?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, the vast majority of the program is carried out by counties. State police have grown over the last two budget cycles. We're contracting with them for about $600,000 a year, which are service hours as opposed to bodies, FTEs. I had a discussion this morning with Captain Cindy Cope, State Police, who's in charge of their game division. And we're talking, because of layoffs and staffing swaps within their department, she's getting a whole bunch of new faces into fishing and game who aren't certified in marine law enforcement. So we're talking about, okay, what can we do to get a quick course up and going to get these folks operational for...
When you say we, you mean the Marine Board.
Marine Board. Do a quick crash course, if you will, here this spring to get them up and operational for the spring boating and fishing season. We are contracting with them for hours of service. So if they don't have the bodies to provide those service hours, there may be some impact there. But at this point, we haven't determined that it's going to have a significant negative effect on the program overall, since the vast majority of it is carried out by counties.
Thank you.
Well, along those lines, it's interesting to me, and I never thought this through. That was a great question. Because how long are the state police allowed to place personnel if they're not certified? Is there a limit to how fast they have to get them certified? I know this is even more severe with dealing with the game officers. And real issue right now, because they are moving highway patrolmen down into some of those dedicated fund areas.
Right. And under the terms of our contract, officers that work on Marine Patrol are supposed to be certified for Marine law so that they have a knowledge of what we're looking for there. Normally, that certification is a two-week certification that we do at each spring up at Camp Rylea, is where we've been holding it for the last several years. What we're proposing to do with them this spring is try to condense that down into something shorter. And we do also offer a one-week course for what we call boat aides. These are often reserve deputies or part-time seasonal people that come on board. As long as they're working with an officer that's certified, the second person in the boat doesn't necessarily have to have that full certification. So that's an option, too. But we're going to have to work with them to make work.
Question from Representative Morgan.
How do you fund those training programs? Are they paid for by the people that take the training, or is there some aspect of your program that provides that?
Through our program, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan, we actually host the training, provide the lodging, meals, and that. The local departments that send people to it are responsible for paying their salary and getting them to and from it. But when we do it up at the military base up there, barrack style, it's fairly inexpensive, and we cater the food in, and it's relatively economical to do it. But we pick up the bill for the training.
Another question, Representative Krieger?
Yeah. I would assume with the shift of personnel that taking a traffic officer and all of a sudden he's required to know fish and wildlife, commercial fish, ESA issues, forestry, water, and all those agencies, DEQ, that they work with. So this isn't something that gets done overnight. It's probably going to be a better part of 6 months to a year before they have all that training and before they really know the contacts and how to effectively work. You're talking a couple of years, in my opinion.
Well, I was wondering, too, on the investigations of boating accidents, is that done by these personnel, or do you have special staff members that deal with it?
Most of the accident investigation is done by certified law enforcement officers, either county or state police, depending on location. We do host accident training seminars to train them in the forensics of boating accidents, which are a little unique. There's no skid marks on the highway after after a boating accident, and so there's some different techniques used to investigate those and try to do that. We also have a statewide team that's available for major accidents, and it's composed of a number of experienced investigators from different departments that we can pull in to go out on a major accident. I should mention too that the counties are an important part of delivery on our education program because they are the front line meeting people on the water and elsewhere, conducting our education program and getting into the schools to teach youth during the off season are two important components of the law enforcement program. Finally, in our voting facility section, here we work primarily through local governments to provide grants for the construction and maintenance of voting facilities, things such as launch ramps, docks, boarding floats, restrooms, and parking areas. A major component there are some federal funds that we've been receiving for sewage pump-out stations, protect water quality, and also a relatively new program called the Voting Infrastructure Grants Program, or BIG, which is designed to provide large transient tie-ups for non-trailerable boats. It's a federal program. And we've got a number of facilities that are currently being constructed under the big program, primarily along the Columbia River, places such as St. Helens, Rainier. We've had them up in the Dalles. Plans for a couple near Government Island in Portland and down to Astoria. There have been some of the big projects too at Newport, Coos Bay, and some places such as that. We do have a 6-year plan that helps to guide this program in terms of identifying needs and where to invest monies. We work very hard within this program to leverage other sources of funding, whether it's local contributions for projects, or federal funds, as I mentioned up here, or federal aid that comes through the Department of Fish and Wildlife for access, or other sources. We try to leverage as much as we can to stretch those dollars. And then finally, we assist local governments by providing technical and engineering assistance so that there's more uniformity to the nature of the construction that takes place statewide. We have standards for design, standards for construction, and so we have several engineers that assist local governments with that technical expertise.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul, communities in my district have been beneficiaries of your grants, and I've actually seen the work product on the ground, and they're to a project, good projects. It can't come as any surprise to you that the budget is pretty stressed, and it looks as though it's going to be really stressed going into 03-05. Talk a little bit about the effect, if the Marine Board doesn't get any of the requests that it's seeking, talk a little bit about the effect on your ability to leverage the federal money and to provide these partnerships with local government.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, over the last few years, the federal funds have become a bigger and bigger influence within our facility grant program overall. And with those, there's a 25% non-federal matching requirement. Getting to the point where meeting the non-federal matching requirement is leaving very little discretionary other fund grant dollars that we can use for general purpose, repair, maintenance, and we can only build so many CVA and DIG projects without, you know, ignoring the need for ramp reconstruction, restrooms, parking areas, boarding floats, for which there's no federal program. So we're really kind of at a crossroads in the facility program, and without additional resources coming into it, it's coming to the point where the discretionary other fund resources are pretty well dried up. Program, then we do lose we lose the ability to leverage outside resources. There's less construction dollars, and these projects, small as they may seem sometimes, are very important to the local governments that are putting them forth. Many of the small local communities that we're putting them in. I do view them as a piece of their economic development strategy, attracting people, attracting voters and tourists into their area. So I think you probably get that better from local governments, but they view that very important investment in their parks and tourism efforts.
I want to make sure I understand this. It's one state dollar to three federal dollars.
Federal funds.
Well, you've expressed this in the present funding level. What impact will your fee increase? What will that bring to the program?
Chairman, the proposed fee increase would first off restore about $500,000 that we have to cut from the program if we don't get it. And then it would add on top of that about $1.9 million for the facility program, which would essentially restore it to the 1997-99 level, adjusted for inflation. 97-99 is when we started taking money from facilities to pay for enforcement and other things, and it's been downhill to the facility program. And that is what, in part, I think persuaded the subcommittee last year to direct us in budget note to look at the fee. Was the concern over that decline in facilities, and I think they could look out and see that when we got to 03-05, facilities was just going to continue on its way down without any respite.
Father, I might add that it's been a while now, I guess, but my experience serving on the Port Abandonment Commission, the grant requests through the Marine Board were much, much simplified compared to any other grants we used to go after, to the point where some of them really wasn't worth it because of the requirements for reporting and everything. And the Marine Board grants, a very simple process, I assume it's still that way, and they supply the oversight as the project is moving forward, at least in most cases. And it's just a very clean, efficient process compared to what we see in some other ODOT contracts and those kind of things. Just had to say that.
Certainly appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if you want me to get into some of the other aspects of who we are and what we do, but This gives you a snapshot of the boats by length. It's maybe hard to read from where you are, but Oregon is predominantly a small boat state. The vast majority are less than 20 feet in length. That's these first three columns. We're not a big yachting state. It's a small boat state. Most of our boats are outboard powered, two-thirds. And looking at where people go and what they do.
Paul, could you break down inboard, outboards with inboards? I assume that's all one category.
We have 32% with an inboard. That would be an inboard or an inboard outboard.
And of that category, how would that, do you have any idea how that would split out?
I don't have it here, no. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I could get that if you'd like.
It would be kind of interesting because usually that's a bit less, or size boat at least, isn't it? A straight inboard anymore is usually a pretty sized boat.
They tend to either be inline ski boats or larger.
Okay.
A lot of the performance ski boats are.
Right, that's right.
In terms of where people go, our top 10 water bodies, Columbia River, Willamette, Pacific Ocean, Rogue River, Lake Billy Chinook, Tillamook Bay, 10 Mile Lake, Multnomah Channel, Umpqua River, and Coos Bay. Found out the list of the top 10 water bodies. In years past, Detroit would have been on this list, but this was a survey from 2001. Detroit was dry.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Are those in order, Paul?
These are rank ordered.
Okay. Going back to the enforcement question, I think you may know that I'm serving as the chair of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, and a reoccurring concern that I've heard at meetings, and I share that concern, are that with the influx of visitors that will be coming to Oregon, particularly as we approach Oregon's signature event in November of 2005, I'm worried about somebody from Missouri taking their little inflatable out, pumping it up, and throwing it in the Columbia, thinking that this is a placid, easy-to-deal-with river, and not recognizing the amount of commercial traffic and really how dangerous the river is. How much stress is that going to put on your enforcement activities, particularly as you're looking at law enforcement stresses at the local and OSP level? What are you going to do to deal with your number one river is going to have an influx of unsophisticated visitors? And by unsophisticated, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. I just mean people who don't maybe appreciate how powerful and dangerous the Columbia could be.
Chairman and Representative Johnson, we've got our eye on that ball. The difficulty is knowing whether it's going to materialize or not, or to what extent. To date, we've produced, and I think I shared it with you, a Columbia River guide for Lewis and Clark, and half of that guide, which is a map guide, explains some boating safety tips, things to watch out for on the river, the ship traffic, the wing dams, the weather, other things like that. We hope that will help people to some extent. We've been actively engaged with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers talking about the hazards of walking through the upper dams, and work with them on their policy where they're not going to allow canoes and kayaks and unpowered boats to lock through for those events. They're going to have to portage around somehow or be escorted by a larger vessel. And we're engaged in discussions with the Coast Guard as well, since they also have a presence there. So between Coast Guard, local governments, Coast Guard Auxiliary, and others, we're going to try to address the issue of boating safety, people coming down. The difficulty is, if it's an organized event, we'll probably know about it. It'll get on the radar screen, and we can track those. Although organized events probably are going to be safer because they're safety in numbers with those. The small do-it-yourself or one or two people want to go down to Kmart and get a boat and become Lewis and Clark. That's a tough one for us to get our arms around because we don't know, you know, where they're from, where they're going, what they're going to do. It's going to be a it's going to be a tough one.
Well, it also raises the issues raised by our chair of private property concerns. My district goes from the mouth to the confluence, and that's your most popular river, so it concerns me with fires and those sorts of activities. I'm delighted to hear you're worried about it and gearing up, and I did see your map, and for a map produced at an expense of 29 cents a piece, it's excellent. It's aesthetically very attractive, and it's a lot of useful information.
Representative Krueger.
Sure. Don, you, about 3 years ago, didn't we develop a certification for a boat operator?
Correct.
And at first you could get it sent to your house, you could make it out and send it in, and after a time period you had to do it online, or I'm not certain how you do it now.
Chairman, Representative Krueger, currently the home study is no longer an option for people, but they can get their mandatory education card either by going to a classroom course. There are online options. They can take a challenge exam. There's several different ways that people can comply. That requirement is limited to people that are operating powerboats. If you're relating this to the Lewis and Clark and the Columbia,
yeah.
I think our big concern there isn't so much people in powered boats so much as the people that want float.
Just somebody comes from California, Washington, Idaho, and they're going to go salmon fishing in a powerboat. So the Oregonian would have to be certified, and the non-resident doesn't?
There is an exemption for non-residents for up to 60 days to accommodate trap people that travel in.
Is there an exemption for age?
I think I'm illegal.
Until 2008, there's an exemption.
Okay. Better all right. Paul, have you had any inquiries from local governments? I'm thinking of if there is an accident or something, the ambulance, hospitals, police, local police. I know it's a real issue for us on the coast and the dunes area. It puts a tremendous burden on the local service providers. When you have major events like the Lewis and Clark expedition, do you foresee any taxing of some of those other folks?
We have not had any communication.
It's hard to gauge, I understand that.
Mr. Chair, I would just share with you that the Astoria Hospital is acutely worried about it, given that they only have a 5-bed trauma department. And have been at all the planning meetings talking about the stress that it'll put on a small rural hospital.
But ambulance service, fire departments, I mean, if they're the first responders, particularly if they're mostly volunteer units.
Yeah, absolutely. And the cost to the Coast Guard, I mean, I don't think it's inconceivable that if you mounted helicopters for a search, you'd have a very expensive search in a very short period of time dealing with stretches of the ocean or the Columbia.
Thank you.
In the interest of time, I can fast forward through some of this because I think the staff has covered it. But in terms of revenue, we are not assuming any major growth in the next 2 years in terms of boat registration. We've been flat, and we're figuring that to be about the same. I would point out that federal aid is another big question mark for us, because all of the federal aid that we receive from Coast Guard, the Clean Vessel Act, and the Boating Infrastructure Grants is subject to reauthorization this year as a part of the Transportation Equity Act for Century TEA 21. Our programs are part of that major, that's the entire transportation reauthorization for the United States, and our programs are a subpart of that. So a big piece of our budget has a question mark over it. That reauthorization won't occur until sometime late this year, if that. I might also mention...
Oh, before you leave that, I've been notified from my district that a lot of the ports are not being funded. At least they're... I know this happens every year, too, but they're not on the list for funding for dredging this year, which will increase the dangers tremendously on many of our ports. How does that impact your program?
That's been a perennial battle with Washington. I might also mention the other piece of our budget puzzle that we don't have right now is motor vehicle fuel tax. We have a survey that's underway currently with Oregon State University to come up with the estimate of that for next year's transfer, and the results of that won't be due until the end of this month. So I would imagine by the time we get to work session, we will have that piece of the puzzle. But given the drought in 2001 and the flatness, I'm not expecting any respite there in terms of growth. I think we'll be pleased if it stays where it's at. We'll have that piece of the puzzle before the budget's wrapped up. And I think staff did a great job with the revenue, so I'll fast forward through this. Really, Susie pointed out the fact that the issue is that we're at a crossroads between revenue and expenditures, and revenue is the issue. I would like to speak a little bit about our proposed fee increase in House Bill 2247. We were directed in budget notes to study our fees during the interim, which we did. We had five budget meetings held throughout the state to present stakeholders and interest groups with the ramifications of where we were between revenue and expenditure.
Is this in the packet you gave us anywhere?
Yep. Should be, yes.
Should be. Could you possibly drag that thing closer?
That's great.
Then we'll get to the point where some of us need it farther away.
And the fee report is within in your packet as well, the entire report that we gave to the October Emergency Board. But as I said, we had budget meetings around the state to show people where we were with revenues, where we were with expenditures, and the shortfall, which was about $1.3 million. Stakeholders and constituents and customers unanimously told us that they didn't want to go there in terms of reducing programs. There were a number of options for doing that. We could take all the cuts in facilities. We could take them all in enforcement. We could spread them across the board. They didn't like any of the above. But in the end, the one that was the most palatable was if you had to take the cuts, do them across the board, which is what's reflected in our reduction options, take them in all program areas. They were quick to say, we don't want to go there. Let's look at fees. And if we're going to look at fees, let's look not only at getting back to where we are, but what needs are out there that are currently unmet. In reviewing the fees, we have a current tiered system with different length categories, up to 12 to 16, 16 to 20, and 20 and up. And as you examine that, it becomes clear that no two boats of different length pay the same rate. Everyone's paying a different rate when you divide it all out. And so we said, well, that's perhaps not the most fair way to do this. And so in the options for fees, we looked at a number of scenarios there, too, ranging from do nothing, one of our charges, to an across-the-board fee of just adding $10 to everybody. We looked at various other, foot ratio combinations. But the one we came up with that seemed to hit home.
We have a question.
Paul, in the discussions with the stakeholders, was the discussion introduced that Representative Johnson brought up about broadening out the pool so that you had more types of boats covered?
Chairman, Representative Morgan, a number of people raised that issue that they felt that it would be only fair that non-motorized users pay somehow. So we have heard that from a number of people, and as I said earlier, we studied that 2 years ago, and I'll bring that report tomorrow. But the problem with that approach is that that user group, as Representative Johnson alluded to earlier, is just dead set against paying in any way, shape, or form. There were bills introduced in the 80s to do that. Two sessions there was legislation introduced. There was a House task force that studied it, and no sale. Wouldn't go.
Well, times change, though.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine that over the 20-some years in the interim there, that I think we've seen a huge growth in rafting and kayaking and all that kind of stuff.
I think it makes good sense. My board supports the concept of doing that, but doing that report 2 years ago, we also came up against the what we thought was the political reality of it, and that it wasn't going to fly. So rather than wasting time trying to pursue something that we felt was futile, in this effort, we were charged with looking at our existing fee structure. And so I think we stayed to that charge and said, well, let's work within the user group that we know and that is already linked with paying user fees.
Paul, could you, I think you said part of it, how many hearings did you have and how many people attended those hearings?
Mr. Chairman, we had five budget hearings around the state. We started in Salem. We went to Coos Bay, Medford, Bend, and back up to Portland for those meetings. Some of them we had as many as 40 people or more. There were a few that were 10 or 12 people. The numbers, the overall number wasn't a huge number, but it was representative in that we had representatives of the spectrum of our stakeholders participate in those meetings, both from local government, user groups, boating clubs, yacht clubs, steelheaders, fishing guides, and other people participated in those discussions. So I think it was representative. The stakeholder group that we assembled was made up of the same kind of blend of different interests across the spectrum. They reviewed the results of the budget meetings. They reviewed the current tiered structure of fees, agreed that that wasn't really a very fair structure. And the bottom line was that the option that resonated the best with everyone was going to a flat per foot fee. And the fee that we settled on was $3 per foot for 2 years, $1.50 a foot a year. And with that, it would raise sufficient revenue to cover the existing shortfall, the shortfall in the current budget, restore facilities to their 97-99 level, enhance law enforcement services consistent with the statewide plan that we also did as another budget note, and provide for safety education at the same time. And it would be a fee that would be sustainable for this budget over the next several budgets so that we wouldn't be returning to you in a couple of years back in the same space again.
What percentage of the attendees at those hearings were opposed to the fee increase?
We had one gentleman walk out in Medford. He was upset about it. Other than that, we've had nothing but letters of support for the increase. It was well publicized. There have been articles in a number of newspapers. Outdoor sports writers in Oregon have covered this story in all of the major papers, and as a result of that, phone hasn't been ringing off the hook for us with people saying no way, no how.
And I'm getting letters of support. I assume the rest of the committee is too. So.
And I have, and I can bring tomorrow for you a whole package of letters that we've been gathering up on the issue of the budget and the issue of fees. I believe some of those people probably want to testify as well.
Okay.
But anyway, I think we have a broad consensus around the fee bill. Currently it's in the Water Committee, and I don't anticipate a hearing on it for a few more weeks. But we would hope to get that bill down here for your consideration as a as part of the budget.
I've got a call in to Chair Jensen and asked him to move it as soon as he can. So.
With that, I think I would skip to packages if you want me to, or if you want, how much you want to get into the detail.
What's the wishes of the? We've got plenty of time, and we're going to.
I wouldn't mind being stepped through the details.
Right, and we're going to have tomorrow too, Paul. So
okay,
I think that's
okay.
As much as we can.
All right. Well, looking at the governor's balanced budget for administration and education, the first major program area, we have our base budget. The adjustment for salaries and that, we understand that will be coming out. Inflation and state government service charge increases. So the calculated current service level budget for the governor's budget was $4.3 million.
No, well, was yours one of the budgets where they didn't have time to back out the increases on the salary side?
That's correct.
We have five packages in this area of the budget. The first package, 070, which goes across all the agency lines, but 070 is the revenue shortfall package of $236,000. This is the prorated part of the shortfall that falls within administration and education. And it has one position associated with it in our administration section, customer service position. We have package then 101, which reverses 070. 101 and all the other packages are contingent upon the fee increase. Package 101 merely undoes the cuts in 070, restores the position, and brings it back to even. Package 102 is a package known as a safe and sustainable boating. This was a very popular package in the budget meetings. It has a number of components, first of which is a campaign to promote life jacket wear among people. 90% of our fatalities involve people that aren't wearing a life jacket. And it's a message that we feel we need to drive home in this state if we're going to have an impact on reducing our fatalities. We've had campaigns aimed at drinking and boating, and we've made great inroads with reducing the incidence of drinking and boating and deaths associated with drinking and boating. Life jackets are a tough one to crack, getting adults to wear them. Children are required to wear them in Oregon, and we have almost universal compliance with children wearing life jackets, and I'm pleased to report we haven't had a child fatality in Oregon since that was enacted several years ago. So it's been very positive. But getting the parents and the adults to wear it is another story. And so a part of this package is to promote life jacket wear in Oregon. Second component of this is a piece that we call sustainable boating. And this is to address a variety of issues that affect boating and the environment. Things such as the spread of aquatic nuisance species, zebra mussels, various weeds, bitten crab, other things like this that are becoming increasing concern for a number of agencies. And boaters, because of their mobility and the fact that they trailer in and out of various bodies of water, are one possible vector for the spread of these species. So part of it is sustainable boating to deal with that, to promote best practices for clean boating, to promote clean engine technology, the use of EPA-compliant engines and other things like that to make boating safe and not safe, but sustainable. Then the third element of that package is a grow boating or promote boating in Oregon component. It's a relatively minor aspect, but it's aimed at working with marine dealers in the marine industry to promote boating opportunities in Oregon, to get people focused on places where they can go, what opportunities are out there, and to help, because boating is a big business. Many parts of the state, the seasonal influx of boaters to the coast and Pouitan and other places like that have a tremendous economic impact, and we think it makes good sense to do some marketing there. So that's package 102. As I said, it was a very popular package with our stakeholders and interest groups. Package 103 is it's one package broken in three parts. You'll see it show up in the other two segments of the budget. It's an information technology package. It totals about $150,000, and it's prorated across agency lines. It's the result of an information technology plan that we put together, reviewed with IRMD. We've shared it with your staff, and it crosses agency lines. The fourth package is the approval of position reclass within admin. This was approved at the October Emergency Board. And since that was after the cutoff for carrying things forward into the budget, it's included within the budget to carry forward the approval that was already made by the October Emergency Board. So those packages total $417,000 and bring the governor's request budget to 4.7.
Hey, just so that I'm making sure I've gotten the picture here, the FTE stays the same through all of this, because what you've got is if we choose package 070, you lose the position. If we choose package 101, you retain the position.
Right.
So, okay.
There's no net increase in positions in the governor's recommended budget. In the law enforcement program area, we have a base budget of 10.1. The fix adjustment, again, which we understand will be removed. Inflation and state government service charges. Most of this inflation is within the contracts that we have with local governments and state police for services out in the field.
So could I just, if we're going to back the salary increases out, then we could expect an adjustment in that number too?
Yes.
In this inflation number? This inflation number is primarily local government.
Our instructions from the co-chairs is to back out all inflation, whether it's other funds or federal funds. But subcommittees, it's my understanding that subcommittees, if the agency makes an argument that you accept or you believe, you can restore that. But that direction hasn't been given yet. And in this case, where the inflation is for the county law enforcement contracts, that would probably be one that I wouldn't recommend removing. Or the transfer to the state police.
But in relation to the state police, it would make sense to remove that portion.
You'd be reducing the hours of service that you'd be getting from the state police. It's not a salary thing.
That's right. It's just a contract for service. Okay, I see.
Well, if you don't mind, I want to come back to this. Marine officers are they the same individual who is a game officer, like in the state police? And is that true in the Sheriff's Department? Are they dedicated funds from other sources besides just the Marine Patrol?
Chairman, the state police are game and fish officers. They're within that division. County officers, for the most part, are dedicated to marine law enforcement. Some are reserve officers, some are seasonals, and some are full-time, year-round marine officers, depending on the county. Some of our programs are 24/7, 365 days, like Multnomah County, and others, especially in eastern Oregon, some of them are seasonal programs.
Then I want to come back to Representative Krieger's concern that if these state police officers are going to be off for some time being trained, certified in the game division, are we going to have a lack of personnel out here patrolling the waters? Even though we're paying for them.
Senator Mesley, I'm not sure I can answer that.
You can gather some information for us. I appreciate that. Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, also, I know some of the sheriff's office through their search and rescue is a part-time or a time-and-a-half position. It's Marine Board, but you might get two other people in the boat because part of it's a Forest Service thing, and like the Rogue River, they got a wild section, and they help fund a Marine deputy, and there's quite a mixed match at the local level with the sheriff's offices, too, on their funding.
But in that case, it's probably not a training issue, is it? For certification.
Not now, no.
So that, okay, moving law enforcement down to packages. Again, 070 is the revenue reduction, nearly $600,000, so that would come out of contracts and service delivery. Package 201 restores that, puts it back, and you'll note that it restores it at a higher level, and that difference of about $140,000 is state police. Package.
Is that the roll up then?
Yes.
That's a pretty stiff roll up.
Nobody's arguing.
Then package 201, enhanced law enforcement, implements the statewide study and plan that we were directed to do and by the 2001 legislature, and you have a summary of that report within your materials. It asked us to look at the delivery of service, duplication of effort, and whether we were getting the best delivery of service currently. And we were to look at gaps and overlap in coverage. The report concluded after reviewing county programs statewide as well as the state police program that if anything we're way short on service coverage. The chance of encountering a Marine officer out there is slim to none in many, many, many places of the state. And so if anything there were significant gaps in Marine law enforcement coverage statewide. This 966 is the highest priority of the needs that were identified within that. We identified three tiers of needs within Marine law enforcement, and this was just the tier one needs, the highest essential priority needs. There were additional needs identified as lower priorities that we did not bring forward as a part of the budget.
Mr. Chair, could we get some quick examples of the priorities that chose not to fund?
I can bring those to you. I might mention too that one of the elements of making our law enforcement program whole is capital outlay. It's a significant portion of this. We have a fleet that has an average age now of over 12 years. Some of the boats go back to 1969, and many of them are in dire need of replacement. We have a fleet of welded aluminum boats that were purchased in the early 80s. Those have already been refurbished once. Gone through and recycled, and now they're approaching the second leg of that. They're not going to make it any longer. So we do need some capital outlay funds. We've frozen capital outlay in the current budget period because of revenue concerns. So I think we purchased one boat in this current budget period. The backlog is getting worse. So we need to address that.
Well, I'd like to ask you not to convey that to my wife because I told her my last boat was last me the rest of my life.
Same thing about pickup. You want to
play. Yeah. The last piece of this is the information technology. This is part two of three parts that cut across the budget. And then finally, the facilities program. Our base budget is 8.3. Again, the PICS adjustments, which we understand will come out. Inflation and service charges there. Our current service level projected at 8.7 and 10 FTE. Here, the revenue reduction amounts to just under $500,000 for facilities. And package 301 restores that, just again flip-flopping it. Package 302 restores facility grants to their 97-99 level with an infusion of $1.9 million. All of this is contingent on the fee increase. Part 3 of 3 with the information technology portion, the facility share. And here's one other. There are two reclasses, one in admin and one here. This was also approved at the October Emergency Board. This was a natural resource specialist. It was approved at the E-Board, but that doesn't catch up with the budget, so we have it here. Make it permanent. And so those packages total a little over 1.9 and bring the facilities program total up to 10.7.
Paul, I'm a little slow today, but information technology, do you contract that, or do you hire your own staff for that?
Chairman, we have one staff person who maintains our technology base, our server, our websites, all of our computer needs. We do that with one FTE. We haven't invested in that very much in the current biennium either. And so part of this is a backlog of things that need to be done to maintain those business systems and enhance them. It was a very comprehensive report that was prepared on that. We've shared it with LFO staff, and it documents about 12 assorted projects that need to be carried out over the next 2 years.
The reason I'm asking the question, in other budget hearings we're having right now, we keep seeing this coming up. It amounts to a lot of money, particularly in some departments. It begs the question of, should we be coordinating this across agency lines, or is that just not going to work? Do you need them on site? Or there are some we've heard that do contract at all.
Mr. Chairman, we do it on site. That person is a one-man fire department, and I don't think there's a day goes by that he's not putting out a fire somewhere or another to keep things up and running. Not only our registration system, which is a big part of it, that most of that resides on the mainframe, but all the interfaces to that need constant care and attention. And then just the growth of information technology over the years has come to the point where probably one of the most indispensable positions that I have in the agency. And 15 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case because we only had one PC back then. But
as you upgrade your equipment, will that demand be less? Or I guess with some of the new equipment I try to work with, it gets worse, actually.
It gets worse. It doesn't get better. But I think it's just gotten to the point where it's an indispensable part of operations anymore, and it's the cost of doing business.
Cover
pretty well.
Well, I can go on. It depends on how much more you want. This is just another recap of the policy packages once again. We have that. This is a recap of the same things that I've said with lack of revenue being a problem, the reduction the work with stakeholders, and then circling around again to the fee increase. This last thing, if you want to touch on it, with our performance measurements. Here we've got the effective reductions, since we're charged with doing that. If we take reductions, we would take them all out of special payments. That's the only place to take them. We'd stay in ending balance, so we'd be collecting user fees but not returning them to the users, and don't think that makes a whole lot of sense. We have a number of performance measurements that we submitted to the Progress Board, and they've been approved, and they're within our budget book. We've got them along the lines of our primary mission, promoting boating safety, looking within law enforcement, the number of people who pass safety inspections, the amount of contract in our law enforcement contracts, the patrol hours actually spent on the water as a measurement of how well we're doing there. Within administration and education, targeting drinking and boating, and looking at the percentage of Oregonians that believe that drinking while boating is unacceptable by both the operator and the passenger. And then comparing Oregon's boating fatalities as a percentage of the national average as a benchmark or performance measure. And then percent of inspected boaters who are in compliance with the new mandatory education requirement. This year, this person's 30 and under, and then over the next 6 years, it will ratchet up until by 2008, everyone has that card.
Representative Morgan.
Okay, in looking in this three-ring binder of this, some of the performance measures are lacking targets, or there's places in the span of time when there's no targets noted. It's page 16.
16.
It's page 16-17.
Some of them don't have targets because they're new. Some of them don't have targets because they're new.
So what's your time frame to be filling the targets in there?
Some of those targets are biennial, so we only collect data once every 2 years. And on the new ones, we miss the first time frame. So they'll start.
Excuse me, maybe you could come up and speak to the mic, and I need you on the record too, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Hillary Crew. And I'm the budget person for the Oregon State Marine Board. And to answer your question on the targets, this is most of these are new, and some of them we've been able to collect data for a number of years. Other ones we're just starting. And I see, for example, the number three. We are just beginning to collect that data, and the reason that there's 2000 and 2005 is because that was originally what we were asked to present, and this page was just done. It was just required last Friday to be submitted, and because there was Progress Board, you know, we didn't get information to do this, and so this will be updated as we go through the process.
So is this something that we shouldn't expect until next time the legislature meets, or is this something we should expect by the time we're in work session on this?
I'm not sure. I can certainly go back and we can take a look at this and see if we can redefine the targets. I did submit this to the Progress Board, this data sheet. It was sent back to me, approved. So they did not request.
Well, did they approve the numbers, or did they approve the goals themselves?
They approved this entire document. This is their whole final, along with the data summary sheet. We went through the entire process.
I think if I could just make kind of a philosophical comment here. As we move through budgeting and succeeding bienniums, being able to measure the targets that the agency set for itself and then the progress that it's made towards the target is going to be real critical. And so I think that if there is a way to work on setting the targets in the near frame rather than the far frame, then it'll add an aspect to our discussions about what we can expect to see for the investments that we're being asked to make in the programs.
Certainly do that.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get a sense of how useful the Progress Board's information to you was. You sent this in. You were required to produce this last Friday.
Parts of it.
The actual submission of this particular sheet was due last Friday, and we received information that it needed to be in about a week prior to that.
Okay. So you all sat down and as a staff put together the data that you had the ability to capture.
Yes, that is correct.
And you sent it back to the Progress Board.
That is correct.
And then the next contact was it came back to you just stamped okay.
That is correct.
Did the Progress Board sit down with you and give you any guidance as to what the expectations were or the fact that it might appear that your data was flawed?
Do we have a fire alarm?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Turn everything off. Okay.